Hello, welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the founder and CEO of Church Answers.
In the totality of the podcast this week, we have been going over the issue of change. We have done so on Rainer on Leadership, and then further into the week, we did so on Revitalize and Replant. And now for the second podcast on Rainer on Leadership, we're going to continue to talk about this issue of change. Previous podcast, we talked about why you must become a change leader. On Revitalize and Replant, we talked about the guiding coalition and how you need them in the process of change. Today at Rainer on Leadership, we'll be talking about the issue of longevity. And again, we've talked about eating an elephant one bite at a time. There is a presupposition there. If you're eating an elephant and gradual change is taking place, you've got to be around for a longer haul in order for that change to really become effective. That'll be the topic today. But as always, we are so thankful to Southeastern Seminary for being our supporter, our sponsor, and our partner in ministry.
Yes, the mission at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary is to glorify the Lord Jesus Christ by equipping students to serve the church and fulfill the Great Commission. The school offers more than 40 different degree programs, including their brand new Master of Arts in Church Revitalization in partnership with Church Answers and the Revitalize Network. This 37-hour degree is designed to help students move established churches from flatlining to flourishing. You can learn more about this program and more by visiting sebts.edu or tomrainer.com/MACR.
It's really been strange. Today, I'm looking, it's almost 2 o'clock Eastern time as I'm recording this. I've gotten 3 inquiries about the MACR, two of them from people that have already been accepted. Another one just came in from our friend Joe Donahue. You know Joe?
Yep.
He just got accepted to the MACR.
There we go.
And he was saying, which 2 courses can I take through the Revitalized Network Convention? And I can't remember which 2 they are.
It won't be theology. Oh, wait a minute.
No. He lists 4 of them, and he says, you know, which of them will be there. So I've got to figure that out, or I'll send it to Jana, because Jana got an inquiry today that she sent to me that I sent to Chuck Wallace. We'll get it all figured out one way or the other.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's cool. That's good. It's exciting to see those classes start to fill at the seminary over in Wake Forest with the Master of Arts in Church Revitalization students. So I know they're excited about that. I'm excited. You're excited. So be great to see a lot of them at the Revitalize Conference in 2020. You can find out more about that at revitalize2020.com. All right.
There you go.
So jumping into this, longevity, why it's critical for change leadership. We got 6 reasons today. Number 1 is because trust is built over time.
I said in a previous podcast this week, so if you've been listening to them consecutively, this one will be a little bit of a rerun from what I've said, but in most church situations, if it's a revitalization for sure, but in most church situations, you are not the pastor in the hearts of most church members until about your 5th year. So you're going along for 4 plus years, and you're just hoping that you're building up trust. It takes at least 5 years in most churches, not all of them, but it takes at least 5 years in most churches to even be trusted. And if you are going to be a change leader, you better be a trustworthy leader. Now, Jonathan, that begs a question. Does that mean that we have to wait 5 years to initiate change? No, it just means that you need to have this guiding coalition working alongside you that is trusted in this process so that you can use their trust factor to fill the deficit where you are not necessarily accepted as the primary leader.
Have you got any examples of that from your time as a pastor that, you know, you had to rely on others to kind of help build that trust that you, because you're a new pastor, you're probably right out, you know, 2 of your churches, you were either in seminary or right out of seminary and then went down to St. Petersburg, pretty much your quote unquote first church out of seminary.
Right.
And then, you know, at Green Valley. So what are some examples of things that may need the trust built over time?
Well, for one example, at the church in Isaiah, there, I won't say that we were in financial straits, but it wasn't financially healthy. And I depended upon a key businessman in the church. even though I have my own financial background and knowledge, I depended upon him a lot, not only to guide me on some of the things that were going on, but to tell me how we might reverse this situation in the healthiest way. Then at my church in Birmingham, I relied on a businessman who was a CEO of a construction company, and really sharp businessman. But I relied on him a lot because we were running out of space. And Jonathan, these were back in the days when if you ran out of space, you built something. I may not have done it today, but that was the solution back then.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I built that Sunday school building, wasn't it?
Education office space.
That's right. Yeah.
And he guided me through that process. Those are two examples of people that I did not have the creds to lead change in financial health at St. Petersburg Church or in a building program at the Birmingham Church. And they weren't just critical of the process. They did most of it. It was their trust that was superimposed upon the people instead of my own trust.
Yeah. All right. And speaking of the people and the trust, as you become pastor for longer and that longevity builds, you begin to know your congregation better.
Here is a truism for most pastors. Those that you think are your biggest supporters early usually aren't. Those are the people that come to you and say, I love you, brother. I've got your back. And yeah, they got your back, all right. Knife in it some of the time.
they're watching it to see where to put the knife in it, huh?
And it's just a truism. I can remember the person who showed up when I was the moving van was showing up to my house in one of my churches. He said, I just come here to tell you I love you. I'll always have you back. You can count on me. Man, everything was just the opposite. He was a pain in my flesh. And I just, that's going to happen. But what will also happen is some of those quieter people, some of those people that are don't just come out and tell you how much they're going to support you and how great they are, you'll begin to learn them and you'll begin to know them better. And the better you know them, the more that you realize you have some great committed prayer warriors, people who will fight for you and with you. And the more you know your congregation, the more you can work together with them. So you need these people to walk alongside you in the whole process of change leadership, because they're the ones that you'll begin to know can have your back and truly support you.
Yep. And not only do you need to know your congregation better, but it allows you to know your community better. The longer you live in an area, the longer you know people outside of the church, the more the relationships are built, the better you know your community.
I've watched pastors do incredible jobs of beginning to learn their community so well. They're involved in civic organizations. They're involved in nonprofit organizations. They're involved in neighborhood issues. And the more that you do that, not only do you begin to understand your community better, but you begin to see that your community understands you better. As we're recording this, I'm in Bradenton, Florida, and I'm looking out on the water. So, Jonathan, just want to let you know that I'm here.
I'm looking at a cul-de-sac, not quite the same.
And yesterday, my son, Sam, who is pastor of West Bradenton Baptist Church, picked me up to take me somewhere. And he said, I want to take you along this road. And he took me along a road, and he started pointing to different houses. And he said, such and such church member lives there. Let me tell you about them. And then he would say, let me tell you about this part of the community in Northwest Bradenton. Let me tell you what's going on here. And I realized as he was entering his fifth year, he had become truly proficient in understanding his community. He understood it from a neighbor point of view. He understood it from a personal point of view, from a family point of view. But he also understood it from a ministry point of view. And he is in his fifth year, and now I'm hearing him articulate things that I had not heard him do so with as much knowledge as in the past.
Mm-hmm. All right. And number four, the fourth reason here is that many of the roadblocks have left. The longer you're there, the more roadblocks leave. I mean, it's the Barry Bucket principle that we've talked about so frequently here.
Yeah, quite often we refer to this humorously. If you do enough funerals, then you'll take care of all your problems. Well, it's not just that. Some people do die, and they go on. Hopefully, they go on to be with the Lord. But it's not just that issue. It's also the longer you're at a church, the more people who are there are actually aligned with your vision. So some of your detractors may become your supporters, and they're aligned.
They get on board with things.
They get on board with it. Exactly. Some of them may leave the church and they'll just say, I'm not going to be a part of this vision. Well, anytime there's a departure, we've talked about this on more than one occasion. Anytime there's a departure, it's painful. But really, there are times that in the midterm, not just the long term, but in the midterm, these departures actually make the church healthier because they're wanting alignment between people and leadership. And so you have this, and then you have the third wave that has taken place, and that is people who come into the church because they are drawn to this leadership. They're drawn to the vision. So you have people coming in who are adding to the strength of the coalition for the vision. You have people who've died, and then those who've left the church who are no longer there, that are obstacles anymore. And then you have some people who have transitioned from obstacles to supporters. Jonathan, this does not happen in 1 year in most churches. This does not happen in 2 or 3 years in most churches. Many times it takes the process of longevity and leadership to begin to see these as reality.
Exactly. And that's why a 3 to 5 year vision is critical for change. Like you said, it's not going to happen in 1, 2, 3 years. You've got to have that long-term vision and the long-term, I'm going to call it stick-to-itiveness. You got to stay there. You got to have the longevity as well as the vision.
Yep. And let's answer the question that may be unasked at this point by the listener, but I want to put it in the mind of the listener. Once again, this is not an advocacy that you are not leading change before 5 years. This is not a position that says you do nothing and you just wait until the fifth year and you lead change. What we are saying here is you will have a more compelling case for change in 5 years. You'll have a more coalesced group for a coalition is what I was trying to think of. You have a more coalesced coalition for change. The trust factor will have built up more for change. So all of the things that you have been trying to lead change to for 4 years, 3 years, whatever the case may be, now they're beginning to come together because this longevity factor is allowing you to see these things happen that would not have happened in year one or year two. So you go to a church, and whether it's in need of revitalization or it's just a new church opportunity that you go to, there are different phases that you should look at. First thing you should look at is the first 90 to 100 days. And those first 90 to 100 days are where you're getting to know people, where you're beginning to understand some of the idiosyncrasies and opportunities in the church, where you do a lot of listening and where you begin to articulate maybe a path forward that is not overwhelming, but at least you're beginning to cast a vision. So you've got the first 90 to 100 days. And then you've got the next period, which is, let's say, 24 months. And that's a honeymoon period.
Yeah.
And that's where you are accepted, even though you're messing up. And people still think you're new and novel and you have great ideas. And so you're able to lead change that way. But then it really begins to hit somewhere around year 2.5 to 3. You're no longer perfect. The honeymoon is over. And frankly, this is where many pastors are either forced out or decide to leave because it's a time of winnowing. It's a difficult time. It's a challenging time. And so many pastors never make it to this, but those who can stay, those who can see the other side of this, those who can get beyond this and work through it. We talk about in a previous Revitalize and Replant episode, specifically go back to episode number 107. And we'll talk about this in the sixth point in just a moment. But you have built up this coalition and you're able to move forward with the change because all the pieces are coming together. But I tell you, oftentimes many pastors and church leaders have to pay the price to get there. And it's in that 3 to 5 year period that you begin to really, really see that you've got to work through some challenges. But you come out the other side, man, it can be some great leadership time.
Well, on that 3 to 5 year plan, a lot of people, we think about the first 90 days. I mean, I'm just thinking about going into a new job, having a first 90-day plan or whatever it is, or first year. These are things I want to do. It's hard to really think about what you could put on a list that would be a 3 to 5 year. Like, nobody wants to make a list of, hey, in 3 years, I want to change this, or in 4 years, I want to change this. Those are really tough concepts. I think we have a tough time just as humans in nature. We want to see immediate change. We want to see immediate action. And sometimes things are needed for that. But it's hard for us, I think, also just in human nature, for us to sit back and say, all right, I've got a 4 year plan to change this. You know, maybe it's, I want to move to two services. I don't know, or whatever. I have a 4 year plan to move to two services, or to restructure the staff, or I don't know what it may be. I'm just trying to make up things now, but nobody sits around and makes a 4 year plan for like leadership. Like you see people take, you know, I want a life plan. I have a 5, 10, 15, 20 year life plan or something like that. Those are kind of common, especially in the secular world, but it's hard for us to sit at an organization, institution, church, whatever it may be, and look at it and say, all right, in 4 years, here's where I want to be. But a lot of times that's a lot more effective, because there's a lot of little things that have to happen along the way. And you can set that 4 year goal, 5 year goal out there and say, all right, what are the things that need to get us from point A to point B? And let's take these little small, you know, it's the every mile is made up of 5,280 feet. I've got to go 5,280 feet.
That's good, Jonathan.
Yeah.
I wouldn't remember that.
Yeah, well, I got lucky. That's 1,760 yards, by the way. Mm. So, yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, but the difference there is that if you break it down into those chunks, these are little manageable things. So what may seem like a large change that's going to take 4 years, it's, you know, a lot of little bitty changes along the way. And
let me give a very practical and yet real day example. A pastor came to a church. He knew the church needed revitalization. This is a true story without giving names. He knew the church needed revitalization. He began to learn the community and the neighborhoods around the church. And he saw there were a lot of little churches that were dying. Little is not necessarily bad, but in this case, there were a lot of small ones that are dying. He began to get this vision of, what if we become this place that helps other, not only our church become healthier, but helps other churches become healthier. He said several years ago, this is going to take 4 to 5 years. We've got to work on the vision for our church, and we've got to get us healthy, but then we can start helping other churches as well. That's something that was out there, and he was willing to work toward that goal.
Yeah. Because it took a lot of other parts to get in place before you can do that. I mean, it's like building a house. You don't just build a house in a week. You've got a lot of parts and a lot of things that have to happen before you get that house, you know, what is it, 9-12 months later or something like that. So
that's right. Which brings us to the sixth point.
Yes.
Which is what we have covered in a fuller episode of our Revitalizing Replant, going back to episode number 107. And it is,
you have to build a guiding coalition.
Yep. In change leadership, over time, you begin to find out who the people are. Yeah. Not only the influences in the church, but the people that you can trust as influencers.
Yeah, that goes back to number one and two.
Yes.
Yeah, because you build that trust and you get to know your congregation better. That leads you to building that guiding coalition.
Yep. You build that guiding coalition, and in God's strength, you can begin to move mountains, because there are two things that are going on. You have God working through many. That's one thing that is going on. And another thing is, the more people who are working, the many who are working toward this, the fewer who will be in opposition. And so you have both the forward progress, and you're dealing at the same time with the obstacles that will become less and less as you move forward. This is why I tell many, many pastors, look, plant yourself somewhere. Decide that you're going to be there, God willing, for a long season, and begin to ask God what he can do in 3, 5, and even 10 in 15 years, and it can be an absolutely amazing story. Change leadership, a lot of change needs to happen quickly, but really some of the most substantive change is going to happen over time. So Jonathan, we're grateful for this week of talking about change, both podcasts, Revitalize and Replan and Rainer on Leadership. And as always, we're grateful for Vander Blumen and for what they do for the local church and more.
Yeah, they have 12 Vander Blumen differences that allow them to serve their clients better than anyone else. One of those is that theology matters. Vander Blumen staff has more seminary and theological experience than any other search firm, with more than 250 collective years of church leadership experience. To learn more about the 12 Vander Blumen differences, visit vanderdifference.com. RainerOnLeadership.com. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
Just a wrap up of podcast this week. We don't always combine in terms of thought process, revitalize and replant that podcast with Rainer on Leadership. But this week has been an entire 3-episode week, the 2 podcasts, 2 Rainer on Leadership, 1 Revitalize and Replant, on the issue of change. So if you want to put them all together, I think they could be pretty helpful to helping you understand how to be a more effective change leader in your church for the glory of God.
Thanks again for joining us today here on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app. And join us online at TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.